Hi, Ashish. It's great to have you back on the Big Unlock podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Rohit and Ritu, it's wonderful being back. It's been a few years and I'm excited to join again. Thank you again for having me.
Thank you, Ashish. And, you know, this is, as we were discussing just before the podcast, like, you know, we are carrying on Paddy's legacy and we are very fortunate to be doing so. You know, I think the number of podcasts is now more than 170. So we have a super excited base of listeners for the interaction with you today, and we are quite looking forward to it. I'm Rohit Mahajan. I'm the managing partner and CEO at Bigrio and Demo Consulting, and based in Boston, and host of the Big Unlock podcast as well.
Hi, Ashish. Really nice to have you on the podcast. Welcome. My name is Ritu Oberoi, and I'm also managing partner here at Bigrio and Demo Consulting, currently based out of Gurugram, India, and looking forward to a really engaging discussion. Thank you for being here today.
So good to be here. Thank you again for having me. So Ashish Farad, and I am the Chief Digital Technology Officer at the Hospital for Special Surgery, which is a hospital on the Upper East Side of New York in the tri-state region on the Upper East Coast and on the East Coast, And we specifically focus on musculoskeletal care and everything from what you know may know us as the orthopedic surgical hospital, but actually have the largest rheumatology practice in the world, as I understand it, as well as physiatry and other aspects of musculoskeletal care. So we actually do provide the full form. I started off my career in Texas, and I am a pediatric gastroenterologist. I've never stopped practicing, and I practiced for a long time at Baylor Scott & White, which was the position I held when I was fortunate enough to meet Paddy long ago, and where he became what I consider a friend. I told him long ago the Big Unlock was absolutely the main podcast I listened to, and this is not just pandering to you now, was the one of the first podcasts I started listening to when I wanted to learn about digital health. And I was a young pup that was just a frontline doctor and felt that digital health was going to be something that we all know now what technology is going to do in healthcare. But before people really knew, I think Paddy was onto something, and the fact that he took it as his mission to talk about it, to educate, to really move the field is inspiring still. And I think has really created this forum of where it is now. So all that being said, when I was at Baylor, I was fortunate to be at a system that was very far ahead inside the virtual and digital space, and then moved over to Highmark and Allegheny Health Network as the Chief Digital Information Officer. Did that for a few years, had a fantastic time, learned about a whole new world as a doctor that you don't understand, which is insurance. And value-based care specifically, and was able to make a lot of great programs there and do a lot of good work. And then when HSS came calling, and we can talk about that absolutely inside the podcast of why I made the move, I jumped at it about 10 months ago, and best decision of my career, absolutely.
That's great to know. That's great to know, Ashish. So very curious, you said that you never stopped practicing, right? So, and you're looking at digital transformation initiatives at at one of the largest hospitals in orthopedics and MSK in the New York area, which is one of the largest states. So how do you balance it, Ashish? That is one of my questions. And second is that what motivated you, you know, in the first place? I know that you started your work as a physician, but what motivated you to become a physician? Please share that story with us as well.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So I have a trouble with brevity at times, so I'm going to do my best. So you can corral me here. Please do. So it's a big question. Let me start with the latter, and then you can remind me the former. As far as being a physician, and I think you said balance, and I don't believe in balance anymore. One of my favorite books, I'll go with the former. You know, I love reading, and there's plenty of books out there, but Conscious Business is one of the books that I absolutely love. And in Conscious Business, just a quick premise of the book is that work-life balance is kind of what I'll steal a line is like eat life balance. You eat as part of life and you don't really think of it as separately. Sometimes you have to stop to make sure that you eat. And, you know, sometimes it's like, I got things to do. And sometimes you really enjoy the meal. And that meal can be at 11 o'clock in the morning, or it could be at 9 o'clock at night, or anything in between. The point being that I think if your passion is your work, then there doesn't have to be a line between the two. So there's times in the day where I can take my son to a game and at 3 p.m. and that's okay. But then I may be working at 9 o'clock at night, you know, and that's okay too. So the balance aspect of things is always you're struggling. But I think that if you strive for balance, you're focusing maybe on the wrong thing because you probably don't have balance with what you're doing at work. And are you finding it? Does it feed you? Does it give you passion? Does it give energy? So I don't have a problem with it. My wife may argue that point, but I don't have a problem with it only in the sense that my work is my passion. It's my what gives me energy. It feeds me and I enjoy it. And I think before the podcast, you told me that when you met me the first time, you didn't get too many words in because I was speaking with such passion and energy and fervor about what we were doing.
Yeah.
And that's just me. I apologize for that. But that goes to show how much I really enjoy the space. And it is my life. And it's my life is my work, meeting my kids and my wife and the dog and everything else comes with it is just as passionate, just as energetic. And they meld together. So all of that being said, as far as I'm a doctor first, I'm absolutely a doctor first, a technologist second. And I am to this day. And I think that's a differentiator. I think it's a bit different than most of people that have my titles and my roles. And I hope that that brings a different perspective, value to the equation and to the discussions. And so I say that I grew up during the high tech act and, you know, went and turned a lot of epics on and what have you. But to answer your question about why I became a doctor, I am the first doctor in the family. So that's not a typical Indian answer. You know, many, many doctors and engineers in the families, but my parents immigrated right before I was born. I was born in Chicago. We moved to Texas when I was little. So, you know, I'm an ABCD kind of, if anybody knows that term. And so you can look it up, you can Google it if you don't know that term. But I was born in the States and grew up in Houston. And it was a passion from the get-go. I always knew I was going to be a pediatrician. I really, really enjoy families. I enjoy working with kids. And that was something that I just gravitated to. And that was never a question of I was going to be pediatrics. That was something that I... The other side of it is we did take a family trip to India when I was a kid, and I was roughly 8 years old when we went there. And I did actually contract typhoid fever when I was in India. And as you guys, you know and others may know, it's Salmonella typhi, and it's very significant. It has a high, especially, and I was in rural India at the time, and that was misdiagnosed as malaria, and I was being mistreated at that time. And I, as an 8-year-old skinny Indian kid, that probably maybe a wet weighed about 60 pounds, 70 pounds at best. I lost 25 pounds at that time. And I was actually very close to passing. By luck, my cousin was marrying a physician in India, Manish, who lives in Ohio now. So if Manish is listening, you saved my life. But, you know, Manish knows this at every wedding we see. He's like, you're alive, you're alive. And so to this day, but anyway, Manish comes by and just to visit because he hears that I'm ill. And he quickly just figured out that I had typhoid fever and said he brought me to his home and, you know, treated me and I was able to get the right treatment and get back to the States. And obviously I'm here and I'm well. And I think that played a significant role in my life of both, you know, wanting to be a doctor like Manish. He's a family practice doctor in Ohio now. But as I said, pediatrics was something. And I was a kid at the time, so it kind of resonated otherwise. And then I think, you know, it plays a big role in who I am today, which is I received the wrong care. I didn't have access to care. I received the wrong care until I got the right care. So how do we give, how do we distribute, how do we democratize, how do we get the right care to all people? So I think, again, being at that age, I think it was a profound effect on me.
That's amazing journey, Ashish. Thank you for sharing that background and insight. And Ashish, that brings us right actually to the persistent challenges in healthcare. We all kind of know what they are. I have a laundry list here. It's limited access, rising cost, clinician burnout, admin burden, and systemic waste. There's so many persistent problems that we are trying to solve. I think we're making great progress on several fronts. So how do you think about your digital transformation efforts at the current organization and that you have done before? Can you share with us some thoughts and ideas on how do you approach this and what are some of the solutions that you kind of have been able to put into place to address these?
Yeah, just before you answer, I was going to say that at HumanX, you know, there was a panel and there was a very interesting, perspective on this about how slow things are in medicine and how, you know, it takes years for doctors to adopt, like even like drug discovery or like they were saying, the stethoscope took like so many, like I think 70 years or something before it became acceptable. So how do you, like, because you bridged that gap between like, you know, That's being right. a doctor and coming into technology. So how do you, like, when you address these problems, do you feel that same way that, you know, you have to kind of really address that issue between how technology, like, is moving, especially now with AI moving like at light speed, and how things in healthcare move so slowly? So is that frustrating for you? So I just wanted to bring that in.
Okay. You know, now you know that they have long form podcasts that go on for, you know, 48 hours. I think you guys are directing me towards that, because there's so much there. But knowing that this is not one of those, let's keep it succinct, but try to create value in my answer. So Ritu, a short answer, frustration, or it's one of those things of how do you look at it, and do you see it as opportunity, and you see it as something that we can really go do? So the short answer to your question, Ritu, specifically is the time, even best practices, right? We know that the amount of literature is doubling at a rate that is you just can't consume as a human. Even as a pediatric gastroenterologist in just that one field, I cannot read enough of the journal articles to know what was published. And JPGN is one of our biggest article in the journals, like in gastroenterology, let alone the MSK space and orthopedics and AOS and what have you. Just, you try to consume, but you just, there's not enough human hours in the day, let alone with all the burdens of healthcare trying to get to everything. So we know that, and there's just so much more data and information insights coming up. So yes, the average time for a physician to put that into the practice from the time that the journal article came up for best practice is something like 16, 17 years, which is right. So, and then let alone the innovation timeline from something being innovated to being used at HSS, Hospital for Special Surgery, by the time that we, the knee implant was invented at HSS. It's a culture of innovation. This is where things start. We're the tip of the spear on the world of orthopedics. But yet, right, by the time things get invented, the time they get to become distributed and being used by all, that timeline is massively long. So how do we shorten that? And do I believe that AI is going to shorten that journey significantly? And especially with cognitive knowledge, meaning best practices from a cognitive perspective, meaning I'm seeing somebody, and how do I get that evidence of best practices right inside the journey of care, so it actually pops up as a little side window maybe, or gives me a nudge and says, hey, last week there was a journal on the best practices have evolved, and you may want to try treatment X or journey Y before this. I think that that's 100% doable, right? And what you're already seeing inside some of the ambient vendors, they're partnering with some of these companies already and bringing that inside the time of the note. And I think that there's a lot of potential there to go do. So that excites me for sure. Rohit, I think to the broader question of digital transformation, there's a lot of different ways I can go and frame this out. I would say that certainly the very, very broad way to say it is, right, how do we improve clinical outcomes? Also, at the same time, how do we reduce administrative waste? I don't think they're uncoupled at all. But generally speaking, let me zoom out for a second and take a little bit more of a balcony view and say, I was talking to an academic professor recently, and I'll use her framing that resonated with me. And she said to me, look, the only two things that we should be talking about in healthcare right now is agentic AI and change management. Right. And to some degree, you can debate whether those are the only two things, what have you. But that doesn't mean we don't focus on equity and social care and access. But meaning, obviously, you can understand what I'm saying, because they're going to impact, all aspects of healthcare. But the transformation that agentic is going to have, I'm a techno-optimist, obviously, being my role. But, I was having this conversation with my CEO, and I said, as an aside, I don't have Nest thermostats. I'm nothing against the Nest, but I don't have Nest thermostats because when my Wi-Fi goes down, my Nest goes down, and that annoys me. And so I actually went to old school 1980s thermostats. So I'm not just tech to be tech. I want tech that works. I want tech that actually solves the problem, right? I'm not just a techie guy that just says everything should be AI, because then when it doesn't work, it actually frustrates me more. And Ritu, to your question, when I was a frontline doc, there was so much tech thrown at me that, like, the C-suite or others felt like, this is logical. It's going to work. It's going to be great. And then they had no clue that this actually added more burden to my workflows, and even though it was logically what was supposed to work. And so part of my journey in this is representing the front lines and knowing what the actual problems are that need to be solved. And that is not always logical. And there's a lot of listening, and there's a lot of learning, and there's a lot of observation in the OODA loop that needs to happen to really understand what needs to be solved. And what I bring, I hope, and I bring in my teams, is doing a lot of that time, spending time with them. And then why I bring up agentic and change management is that what excites me most about what's happening in healthcare right now within digital transformation is agentic. And why is healthcare is about workflows. Mm-hmm. Healthcare isn't about a moment in time. Mm-hmm. No doctor and nurse or patient or consumer spends their healthcare journey in a moment in time. Yes. And point solutions or problems to be solved or even generative AI chatbot right at your ready, whatever it may be, is still immature because it's solving a moment in time. If I have a rev cycle authorization tool, if I have even an ambient scribe, if I have an OR efficiency data dashboard to tell me time in, time out, that's only still solving a moment in time. And in healthcare, we don't operate in that way. Now, there are leaders that may operate in moments in time, but truly the problem has downstream and upstream effects to workflows, and clinicians especially work in workflows. So when I think about what agentic does, it is a workflow orchestrator. So nothing up to this point has existed that I've seen that is a workflow orchestrator outside the EMR. Certainly, I'm not saying the EMR doesn't do workflows. Of course it does, and we use it accordingly. But as we know, there's burden and friction and lots of clicks and buttons that we have to push inside that workflow inside the EMR. So agentic has this potential to really be a workstream orchestrator for both consumers, for operators, for clinicians, for administrators, and they are all aligned. This orchestration is actually, I think, where the magic is going to be, the value is going to be, because what happens is every one of these handoffs in healthcare that happens from the time somebody finds care, schedules care, gets care, aftercare, mm-hmm. imaging, in my world of hospitals for special surgery, surgical care, post-surgical care, outcomes, all those handoffs is where you not only have friction with the consumer journey and the experience, but it's also a lot of where the waste happens, because it's lack of coordination and orchestration amongst the teams in hospital systems, because they're set up vertically. So they're set up vertically and they're solving for their silos. They're not solving across their silos necessarily. And that is where a lot of the cost waste is. It's the in between these episodes, these verticals, is where a lot of the waste is. So I do believe that as we solve across and we make the white space in between these verticals go away, mm-hmm. we not only improve the experience, we not only improve the coordination, we not only improve the outcomes, we actually reduce cost. Right. And I do actually believe there's a world, but that world has to be purposely built. Perfect. It is not going to just magically appear by putting in a platform company that does agentic, or it's not going to be built by 50,000 point solutions that just magically orchestrate across. So I think that my teams are working across that, and that first part of that journey is our data. And so we are building a lakehouse architecture, so we make sure that our source of truth around our data is put on a lakehouse architecture that then really links all the data within context. And so if we have context of the data and we understand the work streams and we know the data elements are in such a place that we can link to one home for that data, whether that's consumer data, that's finance data, that's operational data, that's HR data, that's clinical data, that's wearable data, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then when we put an agentic system over on top of that, then it can then orchestrate across all of those data elements to actually take action. And that action then can inform humans. And lastly, I know I gave a little bit of a long answer, but I think it was important is to say that I want to make sure that's very, very important that I say all these things, that there's no implication that I think there's going to be less humans. I actually think if you are touching a human, if you are in front of a human, in front of a patient, I think we need to double down. That is not what we orchestrate. That is not what we AI automate. That is not what we do with agents. I think that what this allows is taking away a lot of the back-end processes that we can then double down on the front-end processes and actually say that is actually what humans should do in the future world. It's the question is, what is human and what is AI? And I think that that change management, the second part of what I said, is going to be a big part of upskilling and reskilling and onboarding of our staff and people, is really asking the existential question, what needs to be human? What is best done by human? What is best done by automation? But that should not create, I know it creates fear to say that it's changed because that could be loss, but I don't think there's loss. I think there's gain of people having more time with patients and humanizing healthcare. I heard that term recently and I agree with it. I think AI has the potential, it will, if done right, actually rehumanize healthcare.
That's true.
Great answer, Ashish. Really hit the nail on the head there.
I think it's a different way of thinking, like you said, Ashish, about workflows and change management and agentic AI and all the white space that can be filled in. So would you think of any possible example? Because this data prep that you're building in the lakehouse, I'm sure is not a trivial effort. It's going to be a possibly even a multi-year journey, right? And then now you're layering agentic AI on top of it.
That's
right. Kind of fill this white space and kind of orchestrate everything in the workflow. So is it too far in the future? Is it near in the future? What are you seeing in terms of this timelines and even in change management, what are some of the challenges that you're looking at and how you're possibly overcoming some of those?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I understand, you know, the essence of it. And I think that, so this comes back to why am I at a hospital for special surgery? Let me frame that first, because I think it's important, because I was at much bigger companies as far as revenues and size and, you know, and what have you. And so there's a very purposeful reason. And these are learnings based on where I've been. One of the struggles, right? And it's an understandable struggle. And I'm very mission-based, you know, Ritu, you remind me that I said a line long ago that we're missionaries, not mercenaries. And I still holds true. And it's a very, very important part of my core and why you understand why it is based on the story in India, you know, but the aspect of it that becomes difficult is that healthcare is so complex. And I know that we know that, but healthcare is hard, healthcare is complex, but so much of it is because the human factor of healthcare and of course the complexity of payment and every other aspect of it. But when we're at big systems, I think what's happened and what's hard is so hard. Like if I had to orchestrate between cardiac and cancer and peds and different geographies and cities, I think what you just said was going to take 5 to 10, 20 years, what I articulated. It's boiling the ocean is what it is, right? It's 100% boil the ocean. And it is massively complex and you're going to end up being one inch deep on everything. And where do you start? And I go to another system and do I start at cardiac? Do I start with cancer? Do I start with orthopedics? And just to say it out loud, nobody wants to be second and eighth on that list. You know, is then you have politics and competition between my division is more important than your division is. Why is your division getting first? These are natural, normal things that happen in healthcare, because special healthcare is no more a generalist. There's a book, you know, by somebody who's specialist, not generalist. And the point being, we are very hyper-specialist in healthcare now. And doctors live in the world of I am pediatric gastroenterology. Don't you dare put me in the cupboard of pediatric endocrinology. Like, I mean, I love my pediatric endocrinology colleagues, but right, we're so sub-specialized now that we think inside our specialty. And I think that that's to some degree has held us back. Sometimes it's a great, great tool from a patient care perspective, but in taking a step back into healthcare, that physicians sometimes don't necessarily think outside of their very, very subspecialty. So the point being, the focus factory that is HSS inside just doing one thing and doing it at such a superb, exceptional, world-class level is actually very, very important, because it allows me to do one thing that is very hard to do at every other healthcare system, which is focus and go deep, because you have to build vertically so deep to do what I just said. And that is very, very difficult when you are so broad.
That's true.
And the fact is that we're, even though I will not say orthopedic and musculoskeletal care is super narrow, it takes a lot of patience. But it also, that's actually important to say too, is that guess what? 30, 40% of people have mobility problems. And the scope and the impact is still there while you get to go vertically very, very deep down one specialty. And a lot of what we do is elective and is algorithmic. So guess what? Agentic and AI actually can do very, very well, right? So there's actually a lot of a perfect storm, if you will. I shouldn't say a storm, but you know, whatever the analogy is, that's positive. But there's a lot of positive aspects that come together that only, in my opinion, my strong opinion, come together at the hospital specialist or surgery. You're the best at what you do. You do one thing. It's highly algorithmic, not only algorithmic. There's plenty of human factors, but there's a big algorithmic aspect of it. And so doing what I did, I think, has a timeline of 2 to 5 years,
yeah,
instead of 10 to 20.
Exactly.
At HSS. So my hope and my vision, and my team's vision, and it takes a very, very talented team to go do what I said. And that's what I'm first in building. And I have already brought and will bring tremendous talent at HSS to do this, is that we are a lighthouse for what is possible in healthcare that will then shine light and allow others to say, it is possible to automate all these backend processes. It is a lot. Yeah. It is possible to orchestrate. And, you know, I think our mission is to show the role that that is possible, that it can be done because of this focus factory aspect and being the best of what we do. And then not only showing the role, but then as from an obligation is to really then take that and say, how do we distribute that to the world from a clinical care perspective?
Right.
Because if we have codified the knowledge base that is at HSS, that is the best of what we do in the role, why cannot that be through agentic orchestration actually be distributed not only in rural America to the broader US, but also the globe? Because it can be codified now. Yeah. And so working through that, I think we really see ourselves as we have an obligation to take what is incredibly special. And it is. It's incredibly special at HSS. I have not been here long enough to have to say that. It is, you walk in the doors of HSS and you feel it. You feel the experience, you feel the passion, you feel the outcomes, you feel the experience. It is incredible. And for those on the podcast that have ever stepped foot in HSS, you know what I mean. And you know it in the surgeons and the rheumatologists and the nurses at every level. It's exceptional. And it's, you know, for me, it's why is it only if you live in the tri-state region do you get access to what healthcare should be? And so it really, you know, it's really incredible. And how do we take what's so special? How do we take these care pathways? How do we create this innovation right through from if we have something that we're able to use at HSS, and we're at the tip of the spear. We're using AI navigations and, you know, robotics and other aspects of musculoskeletal care. That is the tip of the spear. And so we want to broaden that knowledge and education and ability across the globe.
That's amazing vision, Ashish.
Very admirable.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those people on the podcast, and even I'm curious to learn a little deeper on, I know it's a more tactical than a strategic question at this time, but you mentioned algorithmic. So could you just throw some light on that? What do you mean by that, Ashish?
Yeah. Let's talk to that really quickly, because I certainly don't want there to be just a medical futurism aspect of, oh, one day in 30 years, we'll do it. How do we get there? So one, as I said, look, the data architecture is super critical. And I think one thing that I've learned and hired, you know, significant talent is really focusing on the data, because, you know, one thing from my position as growing up as a doctor first and becoming a technologist second is, okay, everybody says these wonderful things. What's step one? Where do I put my first foot to move down this path? It's very difficult. Yeah. And what I would implore anybody in the podcast that's looking at this is really start with the data and make sure that you do have a data strategy that allows you to put an agentic system on top of it. Because if you're right, because the capabilities are there, the tools, but the context is not.
Yes.
Meaning, you have the capabilities that, you know, OpenAI, and now, you know, OpenAI just put the ChatGPT agent out. I mean, it's going to be incredible. That's a capability, but it has no context. It has no data to inform and make an intelligent decision. So we need to get the context right, which is to get the data right. So first step we're taking is making sure that we get the context right, we get the data right, and we're centralizing that. The second aspect of it is that we have made key partnership decisions. This is not something we're going to do alone. And so we have made some key partnership decisions to say, how do we bring big tech, startup culture, innovation into our ecosystem? So I'm a big ecosystem fan. I do think it's an ecosystem that's going to take. And so this week, and as many others, we've launched Ambient Listening. It's not just listening. We don't see it as ambient listening only. It's just listening, describing is only the first step. having the scribing inform coding, CDI, authorizations, scheduling even, CRM tools is how we see this as a platform going forward. So, you know, we're looking at that. Secondly, we have made a partnership with Palantir. Mm-hmm. And so we are working with Palantir. And, you know, what is Palantir doing for us? Palantir is really thinking through that journey from end to end, from a consumer lens, from beginning of care to, that, as I said, orchestration. And so from an operational flow, from a business intelligence, I'll say, but that term makes it minimizes it because it's much more than that, but really creating that GPS for, you know, I think of the main road and I want to define the main road of care. And then I think of the GPS system as when you get off the path, then the GPS system activates and says, here, take two lefts and a right and gets you back on the main road. So I think of Palantir building that with us. So we have that system in place. Thirdly, I'm a strong believer of low code, no code for the masses, because like a system like Palantir is pro code, right? It's going to be very heavy and it's going to be something that I cannot just democratize and give to any employee, right? So I also need another agentic layer of low code, no code that allowing, I do think that the future of work inside healthcare is going to be operator and engineer hand in hand. That is very different from when I was a pediatrician or pediatric gastroenterologist and I had a great idea for my patients and then I put a ticket in to central IT in a 52 hospital system and then I waited to hear back from them maybe 6 months later saying, we have a lot of other priorities and cardiac needs something, so you're on the wait list and the queue, right? But I'm like, I know that this would work and this would revolutionize my patient care and I would improve my outcomes of flu shots for my IBD patients and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I didn't have the tools to actually just go build it in a safe, secure, PHI, HIPAA compliant, easy inside the workflow. And I think that's changing. And I think that if I have an agentic platform that I can do from a coding perspective, I can just say, look, that's what's changed, right? What is OpenAI? It is giving coding ability to every human on earth because it's put it in plain language in English, right? In writing and verbal. So that's what's happened. So why can't I just do that and give it to my rev cycle folks and say, go build your workflows yourself, give it to my surgeons and say, go. So that is the real aspect of how we do it. But why won't that work today? Because the data is siloed. So if they build a agent for calling patients post-op and they have a different agent for collecting prompts and they have a different agent for getting access, that's like five different phone numbers and they're not orchestrating. Again, it goes back to the vertical agents that don't then orchestrate care. And then that's going to create more friction for patients and operators, right? And more costs, actually. So it's the orchestration. And then go back to that. So then having one agentic platform for the enterprise and making sure the data is situated in a way that it allows for orchestration of those agents. And then, you know, so is going to be a critical. So Ambient and then our Palantir work for pro code, high process, and an agentic orchestration platform as well. Those are the three partnerships that we are looking into and we are making as we speak.
That's great. So Ashish, I think we are coming towards the end of the podcast. You know, as you said, there is so much to talk about. It went by so quickly and very, very different perspective, I must say. So would you like to please provide any parting thoughts? And then hopefully we'll have you on the podcast soon to build upon what we discussed today.
It's important to me that we have a responsibility to transform healthcare and to make it better. You know, I think that while I think that AI and agents, Dr. Michael O'Hara is our chief data analytics officer, and he always tells me there's, and you know, if he ever wants anybody smarter than me on the podcast, you should invite him. And he always tells me there's two E's in AI and everybody forgets the second E. The first E is efficiency. And everybody talks about efficiency, efficiency, efficiency. I can't tell you how much more efficiency we need to be in healthcare. I guarantee you there's so much more. However, I think we miss the ball if we only focus on that one E. And the second E is effectiveness. Yeah. We can do better. We can do better than we do today, right? It's not just about doing what we do today efficiently. That cannot be the only goal here. The goal has to do better. People have unmet needs. People don't have access. People get the wrong care, sometimes more than they get the right care. So we need to do better. We want to build a world that not only does it efficiently, but actually does better. And Hospital for Special Surgery does the best of what they do. And it is true. And I think of what we do at HSS, and not really just as a plug, it's true. It's absolutely true. So what we love to do is say, you know, what is it that we do better? How do we codify that? And how do we help make healthcare more effective at delivering, at least inside the space that we have in musculoskeletal care? And I think if we can do that and we take that and package it up, what's so special at HSS, there's a special in the name, and take what's so special at HSS and look at that as a global brand, then really, and I think lastly, what I'll leave you with is something a little more provocative is, even though it's in the name that we do surgery, we actually do more non-surgery than surgery at HSS. And not many people know that. And we actually live in the world of movement. Yeah. And movement is something that what excites me is people care right now a lot about movement with our wearables and our watches and our steps and our, and when you don't move. So let me say this, a lot of healthcare is about loss. And so it's loss of function, loss of, if you have cancer, unfortunately, it's loss. If you have a disease, a chronic disease, it's loss. And we need it, and that is a huge aspect of healthcare. But what really gets me excited and passionate about the musculoskeletal movement space is that there's actually gain. And so I want to move better. I want to be able to play with my grandkids when I'm 80. I want to run a marathon when I'm 60. The people care and people are passionate about doing better and living longer life with longevity medicine. And guess what the number one component of longevity is? Movement. Yeah. You don't want to be 120 years old, but you're wheelchair bound and you can't move. You want to be 120 and be active. It has movement. So I think that we're thinking broader than orthopedics. We're thinking about movement. So I'll leave you with that. Thank you.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Ashish. It was a pleasure having you on the podcast.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Rita.